welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth. Well, the big political news in Westminster today concerns someone's personal life. It's the front page of The Sun and everyone else is talking about it. It's that Boris Johnson's marriage has broken down. James, why has this come out now?
I don't think this has in any way come out because Boris Johnson wanted it to come out. Throughout his time in public life, Boris Johnson operates a kind of rule, but he doesn't talk about his private life. Indeed, there have been other previous incidents in his private life when almost any other politician would have kind of come out, tried to explain their side of a story. He doesn't do that. And today, I think, in a sign that that this really is it. We've had a joint statement from Boris Johnson and Marina Wheeler saying that they are separated and that they are heading for a divorce, which, considering that he has previously never ever spoken about this stuff, I think confirms that that is what's happening. I think the idea that this was in any way got out by Boris's side to clear the decks for a leadership contest is for the birds. I mean, if you read the story and you read the sourcing in there, which is quite clear about Laura Johnson, Wheeler, Boris Johnson's daughter, having been overheard saying this at an event, you know, that is not how anyone would choose to do a controlled explosion.
Katie, it's obviously incredibly sad when a marriage breaks down, but as we've just discussed, it is being viewed through the lens of Boris's leadership bid. How does this impact it?
I think that's the thing. This is a personal story, it's a personal matter, but it could have political consequences. And that's what I think people are focusing on today. And as Jim says, I mean, there have been suggestions that maybe this is Team Boris for trying to like stop it so it'd be weaponized. But if you were going to do that, why would you bring your daughter into this? So it doesn't really make sense there. But that said, given that it is now out, is that how does that affect any leadership bid? Would it make it harder? There have been quotes accompanying that article suggesting that it would, because the Tory grassroots values family values and traditional values. Or is the fact it's gone out now and we're probably even perhaps being optimistic, we're not expecting a Tory leadership contest in the next few weeks, maybe in a couple of months' times. That gives it time to be out, so it'd be harder for his opponents to attack him over. I think, ultimately, Boris Johnson has always had quite a colourful personal life. There have been several stories which, as things stand, and obviously let's see what the weekend papers bring on this, as things stand, are probably more scandalous than this one, when it comes to the various people. And in the past, that has perhaps stopped him being promoted. We've seen him kind of lose certain roles, but it hasn't stopped his general trajectory of going on to be one of the most well-known and perhaps successful Tory politicians we currently have. So I don't think it will hamper his ambitions too much, but it might make things a little bit harder depending on the timings.
James, do you think his opponents would be tempted to use this against him in an explicit way? We've seen how talking about personal lives doesn't help leadership candidates, in the sense that Andrea Leadsom basically stepped down after telling Rachel Sylvester from The Times that as a mother she understood things a little bit better than Theresa May. But we did see Amber Rudd during the Brexit campaign talking about Boris Johnson being the sort of person who you wouldn't want to take you home. So there have been allusions to his personal life. Do you think they will continue, or do you think this has actually closed them off?
Yes, and if you remember back at the very beginning of the EU referendum campaign in the House of Commons, the day after Boris Johnson had come out for Brexit, David Cameron seemed to make a very pointed remark about divorce and its consequences, which certainly allies of Boris Johnson, I think Boris Johnson himself, took exception to. I don't think anyone is going to stand at the hustings and say this. This is something that will be whispered behind the hand. And you're already seeing it. This morning. People who don't like Boris Johnson say, "Oh, this is proof that it's all really about him and all this stuff." I mean, there is already a distinct whiff of hypocrisy in the air today, because some of the people who normally would be the first to argue that we should be a bit more continental about all these things, that politicians' private lives should be private, that, to quote the title of your book, we'll get the wrong politicians if we wish to kind of pore over the details of everyone's private life. Now that it's Boris Johnson, who they will never forgive for Brexit, they want to pile in and declare that suddenly this tells us a great deal about his character, that the curtain has been drawn back and all this stuff. I think we have a kind of choice, which is, what is sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. If you want to start discussing politicians' private lives in if you want to use Boris Johnson's private life to attack Boris Johnson, you are going to have to accept that that rule is going to end up applying to every politician. And I would suggest that the consequences of that for our political life would probably not be good.
Yes, as I say in my book, it's not very easy to keep your marriage if you are in Parliament. So those who are attacking him who are still married should be careful what they do, because it's sort of tempting fate somewhat.
And Katie, that is now available in all good bookshops.
All good bookshops.
And Amazon.
Yes, and we should also plug Katie's I column, because I don't think we've mentioned that this week either. Moving on to something which is perhaps more revelatory about somebody's competence, Katie. Karen Bradley has given an extraordinary interview to The House magazine, where she has admitted something that no minister ever has really before.
Yes, this really is a surprising interview. It's quite interesting. The House magazine quite often seem to get politicians saying things that they probably shouldn't be saying. And obviously, that's no doubt down to expert journalism. But I also wonder if it's slightly down to ministers letting their guard down a bit more than if they were speaking to a national and they were worried they were going to catch them out. But it's made redundant because it then gets sent round to every single person anyway. So Karen Bradley has confessed that prior to being handed her brief as Northern Ireland secretary, she didn't know too much about Northern Ireland. And it's not perhaps, a later level of knowledge. She said that she didn't realise nationalists didn't vote for unionist parties.
James, is this wonderful humility or horrendous ignorance?
It is horrendous ignorance compounded by horrendous stupidity in saying it. The idea that there is any credit to be given for frankness here. But I also think this goes to Theresa May, because Theresa May is the person who took Karen Bradley and promoted her into the cabinet. Karen Bradley is one of her closest cabinet allies. You know, I mean, if you were drawing up a list of May loyalists in the cabinet, there would be two names on it, and she would be the first or the second. You know, it is a stupefying level of ignorance, especially. And Karen Bradley, I think we checked this before. She's 48 years old. Northern Ireland was a major issue at that point. What did she think the troubles in Northern Ireland were about? What did she think the Good Friday agreement was about? And this is, and what's even more amazing about this, it wasn't even when I became an MP I wasn't quite sure about this. This was when I became Northern Ireland Secretary in a government where the major controversy had been about its decision to explicitly rely on the Northern Irish Party, the Democratic Unionist Party, for its support in Parliament. I mean, the lack of curiosity, the lack of knowledge is just absolutely breathtaking. I think it is shameful to our public life.
What impact will this have on Brexit negotiations and also on the stalled Stormont Assembly, which yesterday Karen Bradley announced that Legislative Assembly members would have their salaries cut? Surely to admit this lack of knowledge when starting the job does have an impact, Katie, on the way she interacts with people in Northern Ireland in the future?
Completely. I mean, I think it's quite hard to take her that seriously now, and maybe she can do something to prove that they should. But if you are trusting the UK government and Theresa May and her ministers to deal with things like the Irish border and to navigate a Brexit which is, you know, respects the history there, how are you really supposed to do that when the person who was your first, you know, port of call has admitted they know nothing about the history there? And maybe now she's read up, but it's such a basic thing. And I think a lot of people will be wondering why she's been put in that brief, which is a shame, because I know I was speaking recently to a few Tory activists who are from Northern Ireland. They do think Theresa May has a grasp of that, but this suggests, why has she put this person in that brief, if that's the case?
I think that the Cabinet Minister said to me this morning, I mean, two points about other problems that this is going to cause Karen Bradley. One is, the big worry of the DUP is that essentially the rest of the UK doesn't care about Northern Ireland, but that they love a country that does not love them. Karen Bradley's admitting this level of ignorance is just going to reinforce that on steroids, and that is going to be a problem, which is, when she tries to say, oh, we're not, you know, regulatory checks between goods going from the rest of the UK to Northern Ireland wouldn't change Northern Ireland's constitutional status. You know, that's not going to sound convincing coming from her when she's admitted that she knows quite so little. And the other problem this Cabinet Minister has said is, by admitting this level of ignorance, you are basically your civil servants are never going to let you take a decision. You know, you're just going to, the cough of, is that wise, Minister? Minister, I've been studying this issue for 20 years. Are you sure you want to do this? You are basically saying, don't let me do anything because I don't know what on earth I am doing. I mean, I think this is just, this is bizarre. This is not like a DEFRA secretary admitting that they weren't aware of the free crop rule. This is like a DEFRA secretary admitting that they didn't know that milk came from cows.
Yeah, and I know we covered why she's wrong quite comprehensively by this point, but there's also the point that I think this slightly undermines Theresa May's Brexit proposals. Her whole argument has been that the Irish border is a really serious issue, much more serious than lots of Brexiteers want to make out, and she is the one who's going to be trusted to put that forward. Yet she's put someone in a position which does that, who knows nothing about the Irish border.
So is she for the chop, James? Or will it be the case that the department will be more run by civil servants and perhaps that Number 10 will take over operations in the way they did with the Brexit department?
I don't think she's for the chop in that she's one of the very few cabinet ministers who Theresa May can totally and utterly rely on. I think on the Irish border it has not been the Northern Ireland office issue for quite some time. I mean, you can make an interesting question, which is, if you had a more able and more assertive Northern Ireland secretary, maybe they would be more involved in this element of things, but I don't think she's to the chop, but I think it will stand as a kind of condemnation of the way that Theresa May has handled ministerial appointments to her government, that there is someone sitting there as Northern Ireland secretary who, until they were appointed to the job, didn't understand perhaps the single most basic fact about Northern Ireland.
And finally, if you're depressed by the modern political parties, you can join the Lib Dems for free and become their leader, apparently. This is an announcement that Vince Cable has made today as part of the Movement of the Moderates. And he wants to open up the Liberal Democrats and encourage more people to be members. Katie, is there a reason for people to want to join the Lib Dems at the moment?
Well, I think maybe the best reason is that if they're going to give so much power to the people, you could make it what party you wanted it to be.
Political party.
Exactly. They're pitching it as, everyone keeps talking about a new centrist party. Hey, you don't need to look elsewhere. Look at us. We might just be on around 6% in the polls, but we've got everything you need as a vehicle, and we're not just going to make this too parliamentary focused, hence why now, in theory, if you are not a politician but you think you are the right woman or man for the job, you could put yourself forward.
James, do you think this is effective?
I think that this is obviously a high-risk move, but I think in a way it is worth it given where the Lib Dems are.
So it's desperation.
I also feel sorry for the Liberal Democrats, because senior Liberal Democrats have been making clear repeatedly that they're perfectly happy to fold their party into some new centrist party, but no one can be bothered, no one gets along and actually forms this new centrist party for the Lib Dems to heroically and nobly fold themselves into. I also think this is right, which is, it is very easy to kind of criticise Vince Cable, but if you look around the Lib Dem parliamentary ranks, do you really see anyone who would set the heather alight? If you swapped Vince Cable out for one of the other Lib Dem MPs, would we really think that the result would be massively different? If if Leila Moran was leading the party, would we suddenly think the world was a different place? So I think the question then becomes, can they find someone who can do the job?
And this is the question that I'm going to pose to close this podcast, Katie and James. Who would you nominate as your unlikely person to be Lib Dem leader? Katie first.
Danny Dyer. Just because I think he's made some astute political points so far this year, and each time he has. Maybe not the trotters line, but his comments on David Cameron, the referendum, I think it chimed with the nations. Maybe it's the voice we need. Though I don't know if it would tick the pro-European centrist party bit, but then power to the people.
Well, I wonder, maybe showing my age here, I wonder about, what about the children's TV presenter and Liberal Democrat, Fleur Benjamin, to do the job? She's already a Lib Dem peer, I think. And so, you know, there you go, that'll do. Liberal Democrat could lead the party.
Well, I can't really think of anyone, but yesterday we did have a special guest sitting in on this podcast who was my dog, who everyone seems to love. He's got lots of fans. Whenever I take him on the tube, people want to pat him. So I think he'd get lots of attention. But I did actually used to have a cat who was a marmalade tabby, and he was very anti-killing birds. So I think, given he was orange, he was a Liberal Demo cat. I think we'll end the podcast on that note. You can listen to this podcast and all our other podcasts on the iTunes store. This one's called Coffee House Shots.